We are super excited to have as our guest today, Julia Antobin, the co-founder and CEO of Kapwing. Julia, thanks for joining us and giving us some time to pick your brain.
Of course, Sarah. Thanks so much for having me and for reaching out.
Yeah, we're really excited to kind of dig into Kapwing and your, kind of growth journey over these last few years, particularly with how you've kind of grown into having a board and what that looks like. But before we get to any of that, I want to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about Kapwing and kind of what you do and where, what stage in this startup journey you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kapwing is a fully online video editor. We help marketing and communications teams to make video content faster. So our product is really around how do you take a long form video or podcast recording and turn it into short form video clips? Or how do you sort of automate common editing tasks for the purposes of content marketing and internal comms? So if you have video editing tasks that are giving you a headache, like adding captions or translating your videos or cutting them down, and try Kapwing as a solution for making more video content faster. We started the company about 6 years ago. My co-founder and I originally left our jobs at Google back in 2017 and incorporated the company in 2018. And I've raised $12.7 million across two rounds, a seed round in 2018 and a Series A in 2019. Yeah, we have a team of about 35 people based here in San Francisco and in New York.
Which is amazing, and I'm sure like just that rapid growth over such a short period of time has got to be, there's got to be such a steep learning curve with that.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I feel like this is the first time I'm a founder and CEO, and I've learned so much about managing people, setting up culture, raising money, so many other things in such a short period of time, because startup world is just about being thrown in the deep end.
Yeah, and no, nobody teaches you how to do any of those things.
Absolutely not. You figure it out as you go.
Someone once said to me, "You either figure it out or you don't." And I was like, "I guess that's true." I really want to dig into like your whole journey, kind of learning the ropes of building and managing a startup, particularly as it relates to having a board, but I know you didn't have a board when you raised your first round. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about kind of whether that was deliberate, pros and cons of, not having that kind of oversight at that point. Was that a positive? Was that a negative? What was that experience like?
Sure. So I guess I think a full answer to this question requires some background on myself and my co-founder. So we worked together at Google and left our jobs there to start a company, Kapwing, together. Our first 8 or 9 months of working on Kapwing we were bootstrapping, just living out of our own savings. And our goal was not to raise money. Our goal was to build a business that we could leverage to, pay our own rent essentially in San Francisco. We sort of we'd calculated a number, which was $7,000 that we needed to make every month in order to pay rent, for each of us to pay rent and to eat cheaply in San Francisco. And we were both software engineers, so we had the ability to build the initial version ourselves from the ground up. And our goal was just to reach that sort of ramen profitable level. So when we raised money, it was because, or when we had the opportunity, when we decided to raise money, it was because we had the opportunity to, rather than as a specific goal that we had like set out to start off by raising money. And I think one great thing about that journey and that experience is that we were always focused on the success of the business and on building a substantive, real business from the early days, rather than spending a long time building something that we weren't sure if it was going to work. Like we were validating and trying to make money from the very, very beginning. And also, it kind of bred into our culture a focus on profitability and sustainability. So when you raise money really early on, that can kind of lead to kind of like really heavily at full speed, like trying to explode one part of the business in order to validate a hypothesis. And that was not really part of our culture in the early days. Like even when we raised money, we spent it carefully and in a sustainable way. So all of that being said, we ended up raising money in the summer of 2018, partially because we had the opportunity to. Someone made us an offer to lead the round, which then kicked off a fundraising round. I had no idea what I was doing. I don't know why that person made us an offer to lead the round, but we ended up kind of going to all the Sand Hill VCs and pitching our case, and we decided not to have a board in that round, not intentionally. We didn't really make the decision, but we made the decision because the person who ended up leading our round, which was Mamoon at Kleiner Perkins, decided that, or told us that they did not want to have a seat on the board. And he was super direct with me about it, which I actually really respect. He was just like, we have much, much bigger investments in huge public companies, and this is like a very, very small check for us. So if you decide to go with us, you know that it's going to be relatively uninvolved, and you know, you guys will need to drive product and business strategy yourselves. And since we were already doing that anyway, that seemed actually like a good fit for us. And so we raised the round, didn't have a board, and just kept building for that year. The following year, we ended up having a board, and now we have a board of three people, me, my co-founder, and our Series A lead. I would say some trade-offs of not having a board. So for the most part, for me and for us, I would say it was a great decision. I think it was, or a good outcome. Some pros were, we could just focus on building the business. Also, like we were building in sort of an unsure space. We were trying to figure out our business model and our product and our, you know, I like ideal customer profile. And in that messiness, I think that there's like doing too much reporting can kind of slow you down in some ways. When you need to be moving in a really agile way. Back then we used to say that, you know, we were early enough that our hypotheses, we weren't going to be able to know using product data if things were working or not. We were going to need to act with more conviction than that. And that was very different than like our experience from Google, where every tiny change had tons of data behind it, of course. I would say the cons were that we didn't have any one person that was looking out for us specifically. We had, and I would say a couple of key points later on, like when we were trying to make decisions about our Series A, I think it would have been nice to have like one person who was kind of looking out for us and really wanted to help us to make the right decision. That said, all the people that did invest in the seed round were accessible to us, and many of them were advocates for Kapling, following along on the investor updates, and you know, wanted us to be successful. So I definitely could call a lot of people and talk to them about key decisions, but none of them were sort of like following those decisions, if that made sense.
Definitely. And I mean, having those like informal advisors, I think, is such an underrated thing. Like, you don't need to have someone who's a formal board member to like be getting that feedback and, you know, leveraging expertise that you maybe don't have in-house, especially when you're such a small team. I think a lot of people sort of underestimate the value of that. But yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about kind of the trade-offs. There are so many pros and cons, you know, especially as a startup and especially as a first-time founder. It's like the benefit of having someone who's like just fully in your corner is that it's like, okay, I'm not kind of in this completely alone, like, and there's a sense of like kind of distributing that accountability, where it's like, okay, I have a gut check, there's someone else to sort of weigh in on things that maybe I don't know the answer to, but yeah, like you give up a little bit of that just like complete blank check, like whatever we want to do, however we want to run this, that you have when it's just you and your co-founder.
Yeah.
I'm wondering kind of what that experience was like, you know, moving to Series A. I'm assuming your board member is also, I think you mentioned your lead investor from your Series A round?
Yeah. Yes, joined the board. His name is Sarger. He's a partner at CRV. And I think that, and I think overall, Sar has been an incredible like board member for us. But yeah, having a board does have pros and cons. I would say like the major con is just the time that's required to manage the board. So putting together like board decks and like trying to report back on things that are going on. You know, sometimes that can be a helpful cadence if reporting is not something that you're doing internally anyway, because it gives you a monthly or quarterly check-in of like, okay, how are we doing on revenue? How are we doing on other key metrics? But all that reporting stuff, it doesn't actually do anything to accelerate your business. So I think that for the most part, it's not time that's that well spent in comparison to other things we could do for our business. Now, I'm only talking about the truth for Kapwing. I think other businesses have different structures. For example, Kapwing is an SEO and content marketing company. So our board generally doesn't do that much to help us with SEO. Sometimes they do us a little bit to help with content marketing, but not that much. And versus if you're like a sales driven company, maybe you get more value from your board in sort of asking for specific introductions and having like specific, more like commercial, things to discuss. So I think that it depends a little bit on the company, but for us, the board is generally like not, the board meeting is generally not like a super useful thing for us.
Yeah.
Also, because we just have three people, it's me, my co-founder, and one other person, like definitely my co-founder and I still run the board for the most part. So it doesn't have that much like accountability associated with it because my co-founder and I are really on the same page and we sort of represent 2/3 of the board.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get into that dynamic in a minute. But before we move on to that, I wanted to touch on this idea that you brought up of like, yeah, I think your experience with like managing a board is really common where it feels like it's a lot of work, it's a lot of time, there's maybe not a huge amount of like value that you're getting in return for that time. And yeah, like it can be super tedious, even just like if you're trying to do a monthly investor update, like sitting down to actually write that can take a decent amount of time, which is like why that's our whole product is designed to, you know, help alleviate that and like automate those processes, take a lot of that manual work off of the plate of founders because you just frankly like don't have time. Like it's just not the priority. And find ways to help founders like tap into the resources that their board does have and does offer without it being this huge sacrifice of like time and frankly resources.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that that's I think that's a great time saver. And it's definitely something that required time for me, both in writing investor updates and in structuring board meetings.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, two totally different beasts. Are you sending like consistent investor updates?
So not anymore. I was until like the middle of last year, the middle of 2023. And I think I probably will start again. I think two things that stopped me, I guess two like minuses that I think are, you know, kept giving me pause. One is that we learned that our investor updates were getting forwarded to our competitors in some cases. And that was, that felt bad to me. Like I didn't want, you know, for example, like the latest companies that we had just signed contracts with to be, you know, publicized to our competitors. We're in a very competitive space. The second thing is that I, it was taking time and I didn't feel like all of our investors necessarily cared on like the granular level, like seeing every single month how we were doing. I wanted to be able to frame the bigger successes and the bigger launches and sort of more exciting updates to sort of create a more of a sense of momentum. So those were the two reasons I stopped. Until, yeah, then I was writing every month. On the first of the month, I was writing an investor update to send out to our full group of investors.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting that you sort of backed off on doing that because, you know, there was sort of maybe lack of trust in the confidentiality of it. And that's something we talk about all the time. Like, these relationships can't be productive if there isn't that, like, sense of trust and everyone is working towards the same goals. And, yeah, it takes so much effort and intentionality to, like, really cultivate that. And, yeah, like, to your point, it's only worth putting in the effort if you're sort of getting the fruits of that in return. And I know that's it's a common frustration for a lot of founders where your, you know, VC is saying, like, we want you to be sending these updates. We want these certain data points. And there's a question of, like, well, okay, but what do I get in return? Because it isn't, I mean, sure, maybe there's versions of this for some people where it's literally just, you know, what you get in return is money. But the ideal version of it is that what you're getting in return is support and advice when you need it and other access to resources. And if you're not getting those things, like, really being mindful of, like, how do we tap into that? Because that we deserve to be getting that from our board and investors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's, you know, also just having the empathy for your investor's position, understanding what are the things that they could offer and how to ask for those in a way that makes it as easy as possible for them to keep track of the requests and have an impact. You know, everyone wants to feel helpful. Everyone wants to help. But the question is just, in fact, like, I think it actually builds your relationships with investors to ask them for favors. But I think that you have to be, it can't be something that's a lot of time or, like, requires a lot of, like, you know, a lot of, like, social capital for them, you know? So I think that both those are important things to keep in mind as a founder.
Yeah, definitely. We hear that from investors all the time. Like, ask for help. We love it when you ask us for help, but make it specific. Like, tell me exactly what you need, when you need it, how you want me to do this. And, like, don't leave the creative license to me.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
I do want to kind of get at, you know, we've kind of touched on how you're approaching these investor updates or have in the past. Another thing that I'm kind of, you know, circling around is this idea of you going from not having a board to having a board. When you didn't have a board, you and your co-founder really had, you know, and you still do, but that decision-making authority. But it gets a little bit more complicated when you have someone on your board, right? I'm curious how you've approached navigating those moments where, like, just deciding when you take a board member's advice, when maybe you go against their advice and make a different decision. How have you balanced that?
Yeah, so, I mean, to be clear, I think that us having a small board has been a superpower for Kapwing in comparison to our competitors. We have competitors, I have friends who, you know, had a board member join at the seed, and then when they raised the Series A, they needed not just the board member to join, but, like, another independent to join, and are managing a board of five people. And that process of managing a board of five seats is a lot heavier weight than what we do. And so I think for us, it's enabled us to move faster, make riskier decisions, not need to run things by the board, not need to focus on, like, investor communication, but instead, or stakeholder communication, but instead just be able to move. One example of this is earlier this year, we launched an AI video generator. We launched it way ahead of most of our competitors and much faster because, you know, I think one of the things that helped with that transition was the agility to be able to shift product strategy quickly when the market shifted, rather than, you know, feeling like we need some kind of outside approval or permission to do so. Really, I think that's built not on the size of your board, but on the trust from your board members that you will make good decisions on behalf of the company, that you're, you know, working hard on behalf of the company, and that you're doing basically the best job leading that company, you know, that anyone could do. And some things that we've done with that. We, you know, I keep that in mind when I'm leading our board meetings. One framework that's helped me with that is having in board meetings sort of, we said we were going to do this. This was our goal. We actually did this. These were the results. And here's what we plan to do, because it gives a sense of like reliability. You know, you set out to do something that you actually did, and here were the results, which are truthful and reported, you know, like clearly with data, and, you know, here's what we plan to do. And I think that that framework has helped to create a sense of clarity around and reliability, and just create a relationship of trust between me and my board. And then also trust is built on all sorts of other things, of course, like your interpersonal relationship with your board, you know, being able to be, like being open and honest with data, being as transparent with your decision-making as possible, et cetera.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts about like how to best manage a board, and lead a board meeting. I think that that's different than your question, which is like, how do you know when to take a board member's advice or not? I've made mistakes with this. I would say that since we like started having a Series A board, I think you know, your board, like they probably just don't, they really don't know the full context of your business decisions, and they're not going to be able to make business decisions for you. So you can't rely on your board to like make a business decision unless that person really fully comes in-house and fully learns the context of the decision in order to inform where, like what their judgment is. So I think that there've been times where I sort of intuitively thought that advice that I was getting from the board was wrong. I didn't think it was the right decision, but I sort of doubted myself. And I was like, well, you know, they are a lot more experienced than me, or they have seen a lot more companies, and kind of it has swayed my decision making and my judgment, and I have regretted several of those things. So I think that, you know, CEOs have to run the board. They have to, it is there for you. It is not the opposite way around. If you are, you know, if you believe that you are the best leader to run your business, then you shouldn't let the board run your decisions. And I think that, you know, more often than the opposite, like it has been a, you know, I think like I've listened too much to the board rather than like just taking it as one input into my decision making, if that makes sense.
That totally makes sense. And I think that's something that a lot of, especially first time founders, feel some amount of pressure to do. It's like, oh, am I, you know, if my board suggests something, does it mean I kind of have to do this? Like, can I push back? Can I say no? And I think a lot of first-time founders really struggle with that. But you're totally right. Like, you are the one who's responsible for leading this company. It's totally your decision how you go about that. And if your gut instinct is telling you something that is contrary to what your board is saying, like, yeah, you have to learn to listen to that. Like, it's just as valuable as someone else's take on something, because you don't know how it's going to land until you actually do it, even with tons of experience under your belt.
Yeah, absolutely. And even more than that, like you have so much more context about your business than the board does. Not that the general board, than your investors do. People that are not officers of the company, they just have way less context. And so that's true for everything. Like, for example, if you're having trouble with like a people situation in your company, should I fire this person or should we hire for this role? You know, your investor can give you their perspective from other companies, like, oh, here's what I've seen work or not work at other companies. But they have so much less context about like, you know, the personalities on your team, the structure of decision making on your team, what kinds of skills you need. And, you know, all of that context is very hard to package and convey during a board meeting or in any other format. So, you know, trust your gut. I think it's very helpful because your gut is informed by all of your experiences running the company rather than just a point in time.
Yeah, totally. It's hard to, I mean, even if you tried to convey everything that happened like in the last quarter during a meeting, it would probably be impossible. At the very least, you definitely don't have that just sort of the day-to-day, like, staying really in context of what is happening, all these little nuances that weigh into making a decision.
Totally.
I'm wondering, too, if it's been advantageous in those moments to have a co-founder on your board, like somebody else who has that day-to-day context, that is also in those, you know, meetings with the board and can kind of help you gut check.
A few things about that. One is that there have been times where we've gotten like advice from the board or pressure from the board, and Eric will, my co-founder, like, will kind of gut check on that and just be like, I really don't think that's important. And if I also don't think it's important, then if I also have like some some doubt about whether or not the advice is valid, and I also hear that from another person, it kind of helps me sort of think about like how to approach the problem. And it makes me sort of listen more to my own convictions. Obviously, whenever your convictions are confirmed by someone else, or just your intuition is confirmed by someone else, it makes you more likely to follow it. I mean, I think for Eric and I, we have had, you know, we've been through ups and downs every set of co-founders, business partners has over the last 6 years. And in the times when we have been the most like in sync, on the same page, really knowing that the other one has our back, board meetings are just like basically like super unified. It's just like the two of us telling Sarah what's up. You know, we've already had all of the discussions about between the two of us that we want to have in the board. So there's just no like cracks in sort of like what our approach to the strategy is going to be. There's helpful feedback that we get, and like sometimes we get, you know, help or support in doing whatever we're trying to do, but it's not going to sort of like change the essential decisions that we're making for the company. On the other hand, when we have times where we're not on the same page about something, or there's conflict between the two of us, it can make board meetings like super unproductive, because we're kind of discussing something between the two of us during the board meeting when like really we should just figure that out separately and then bring it to the board. So that's a major thing that I would say I've learned over the years, is just if you disagree about something with your co-founder, or probably like with any other officer at the company for that matter, you need to resolve that disagreement before you come into the board meeting, because it's just not going to be productive for you to try and convey all of the context and everything that's driving the decision in the midst of the board meeting. I don't think that's like the best use of time.
Yeah, totally. And I can see how those like lines get blurred so easily. You're like, well, we're here now, we can talk about it. But yeah. Yes. Well, I want to be mindful of the time, but this has just been fantastic. I feel like there's going to be so much in here that other first-time founders can learn from and, you know, not feel quite so at sea trying to do this for themselves for the first time. So thank you for giving us your time today.
Of course. I have one other piece of advice I want to close with.
Totally, yeah.
I think that like just like everything, when you're a founder, managing people, you know, marketing strategy, whatever it is, asking for feedback from the stakeholders who are involved is the best way to do a good job. So I think if you're a first-time founder, ask your board members, ask them, you know, how is this going for you? Is there anything that I'm not doing that you would like to see me do? You know, what does an excellent board meeting look like to you? Because asking them what their expectations are is going to get you a lot more information and ideas than just trying to do it yourself without any feedback. So highly recommend just talking to your board members. I did that in the early days, and that will get you better results than swinging in the dark.
That, I think that's fantastic advice. Like, just ask.
Yes,
just ask. If you don't know, just ask.